Okay, let's begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, October 27, 2014, and it is 6:30 in the evening. Would you please take a moment to review your minutes and let me know if they meet with your approval?
I am fine.
I'm good with the minutes as well.
Okay. Then, next on the agenda this evening, or first item on the agenda this evening, is the FQC project budget update. And then we have Jack Hayes with FQC with us to present that information to you.
Jack? Okay, so you should have received a kind of a one-page high-level budget update with two categories, construction, and the second category being a total project budget. And I tried to do that in a way, I think the last time we spoke was try to do it in a way that we could put this out to the public and post it so that they can see it and see where things are at. So I tried to keep it as straightforward as possible. So the construction budget, the way it's been put together as of our last update in June, is $13,701,850. And we're 99% bid out. There's a few miscellaneous items that are, we don't want to necessarily order right this point in the project for, like, Churchill, which isn't in real construction yet. But very minor items on the order of things like a flagpole or a bench or something like that. But absent those miscellaneous things, we still are counting the money allocated to those things as committed. So out of the $13.7 million in construction budget dollars, we've committed, the budget is committed right now to $12,862,000, which leaves a contingency and accumulated savings to date of nearly $840,000 against the $13.7. So given that Lincoln will be done in December and Franklin will be done in December, which is maybe 40% of the total construction value, and we still have a strong contingency. As we were just saying with Joe, I think all of the high-risk items are well covered in the contingency. I would expect the district will get a significant amount of those dollars back in savings at the end of the job. That would be my expectation at this point. And then to look at the total project budget, carried that 13.71 down or 70 down as the construction, the budget that we've been carrying for district staff costs of roughly $1.8 million, and then budgeted escalation of $235,000. The project total is still tracking exactly where it was previously at $15.7 million. Now, on the budgeted escalation of $235,600, that dollar, those monies were established early on in the budgeting process with the expectation that we wanted to protect the integrity of the overall project total with the assumption that we weren't going to be building much of this until later in 15. And now that we've been able to pull that forward and award it, we've locked those dollars in. So any escalation has been bought into the job. So that $235,600 is, in my mind, just another contingency that's available to the district. I don't see that money being spent or needed in construction. It was always a soft cost down below the line item, and I, based on the fact that we've been able to buy everything, I don't see it being used. So if you add that with the $840,000 above, we've got over $1 million in accumulated savings for the project. So from a financial standpoint, I know one of the things that you've heard in the project updates over the last few months is that we've planned for and have expended some dollars for overtime and premium time to make up schedule issues with regard to weather. And that money is still tracking well against the budget, against the committed dollars. And I think we've only used about 15% of it through September 30th. So even the allowance items that are in the committed dollars are still tracking, very strong against the budget. Mm-hmm. So I'll leave it to questions.
We fully enclosed?
At Lincoln and Franklin, we are dry on the roof. and window frames were going in at Lincoln today. So the window openings are not enclosed yet, but they're actively ongoing.
So it'll be done in 10 days or so?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say so.
So, Jack, what do you think, what's our percentage of contingency for our total project? What are we at now? I guess the question is, of what's left to be done, what's the percentage of?
Oh, that's a good question. So we've got $840,000 in remaining contingency and savings. Out of the 13.7, we've spent about 3.5.
Four. That's what I've paid so far, is 3.5.
So mm-hmm. We have, let's round numbers to 4. So we're at 9.7.
9.7.
Of remaining dollars to be spent, and we've got $825,000.
So again, rough back of the envelope numbers, so 10%.
Yeah, just under 10%.
But
we wanted 5%.
But all that is let. So
yeah.
So
you're, well, that's good.
All that is what?
Let your contract.
So
morning.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So I mean.
Okay.
It's actually a higher contingency than we would typically expect to be carrying at this point in time. We accumulated more dollars in savings in the bidding process than what we would have expected.
So it's possible then that we would come in, you know, depending on what the final numbers shake out, but we have a lot of room to be well under budget.
And the key thing is what we're talking about, the high risk items. The high risk items are your soils. And the foundation's in at Forest Glen.
Yep.
So, you know, you're just going up from there. Those are usually costs that if you're a contractor for them, you should be good. You know, you're not going to see many extras unless you do premium stuff. Now, at Churchill, our foundations aren't in debt.
No, but they're all going to be on stone, which is going to be the chill.
Yeah, which we saw in those pictures last time, right?
Yeah.
Is that where I asked the question? So, yeah, so you're ready. You know that you're compacted there with stone, so
yeah.
You should not have any issues there.
Right.
So that lowers the risk of going into that $800,000, or it's actually $1 million, you just said, because of the escalations. And the one number I asked, I emailed Bob, is soft cost items, just to see where those were tracking, to make sure there wasn't anything that all of a sudden, like, then oops, type of item. And that's what he provided us there. So it doesn't seem like there's anything. There actually seems like there's some savings that may be had.
What kind?
I know, you're a conservative. Premature to jump off
jump right
and say we're adding to it. So I think, to me, that's another important thing that we're tracking. And so I appreciate you preparing that some short notice. One question I did have is, what was our original contingency amounts? The total, and not by school, but just the total.
The 825 was
okay.
The previous total for contingency.
Right.
And now we're at 840.
Okay. So basically we never went into our contingency and we saved.
Right.
And this is actually very encouraging. And that's something that you might want to put in some sort of
little note out.
Communication to the public. You know, that everything is progressing as anticipated and we're on track and on budget.
Mm-hmm.
It's very encouraging.
I mean, one thing we chose to do as a board is to expedite the construction and
yes.
Got creative at Forest Glen, you mentioned that in Churchill, and we were able to buy contracts at today's prices versus future prices.
Yep.
So one of the questions that we always have when you're buying early is, do you see prices going up? I mean, there's typical wages that go up every June
yep.
in construction contracts, and those and if you can get them before then, obviously there's favorable for you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you seeing in the marketplace relative to increased demand of construction services?
Well, over the last 3 years, we're averaging about 3% per year
okay.
in escalation. I know that's hard to believe, but unions are still getting, union wages are still increasing every year on some trades. And material prices have trended upward. subcontractors aren't taking jobs at low margins anymore. They're starting to earn some of that money back that they lost in, you know, 2007, 8, 9, 10 years. So prices are up. I know that's hard to believe, but so about 3% a year. That's why we had that 3% on the Forest Glen and Churchill value, and you got it out and had it out of it, and we're able to save that money.
Yeah, I actually think in site work, your numbers are up more than 3%.
Oh yeah, there's definitely some areas that are higher than that.
And that's in the site work because those big machines are for the people who are using them. So just to use them so they can pay their mortgage or their P&I.
So
they do it.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
I apologize. I walked in, and if you can just give me, if I heard this right, at our current burn rate, we have a potential to be $1 million under budget for the project. Right now, we have about $1 million between contingency and then at the bottom, the soft cost line of escalation. We have just over $1 million in contingency savings. Some of that will be used.
Yeah.
You know, but I think you're gonna save a substantial portion of that.
Okay.
And realize that our original contingency was 825.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks. Yep. So the next order of business this evening is the transfer of funds for the elementary school additions. Before you, you have a board report as well as a series of three resolutions that will transfer certain funds from the education fund into O&M and finally on the capital projects and from... we're going to have a series of transactions that we need to transfer. We're going to be transferring it's going to be around $4 million from the O&M, from the education fund, through the O&M, into the working cash fund. The balance is going to come out of the working cash fund, and that's actually going to be in the amount of $2.7 million. So the difference between the $2.7 and the $7 million that we intend to transfer is the amount that will be coming out of the Ed Fund, which is our largest fund. So these are really just transactions that we sort of need to get through as we continue to get through these projects and pay the contractors as they're requiring. As Jack mentioned a few minutes ago, we've spent approximately $3.5 million as of this last round of bills that are going to go through. So over the next several months, we expect the balance to be coming due. So I thought I would provide nice, clean, transparent transfers from the funds where the monies are now kept into the capital projects fund, and then we can do a reconciliation once the projects are done, and we can determine exactly where we want that money to end up or where it sits. But that money, until it actually leaves our hands, is sitting in funded accounts where we're earning a certain rate of return. So transferring these funds from one fund to another fund doesn't change our ability to earn revenue on those transfers. So, pardon me?
No matter how little those
bases are. Oh, you know what? We forgot to catch you. We had a meeting today, so I just wanted to touch base with you.
I read through everything, and I think it's self-explanatory. But the one question I had, and I don't know if it was a typo or I just didn't catch the funds. I was trying to go through it on your notice, a public hearing doc. It says $4 million. Should that be 4.3? I even wrote 4.7.
It should be 4.3.
I wrote 4.7 in my notes, so I couldn't even get the detail.
So the amount of money that's coming from working cash, that does not need a public hearing. I'd rather the
right,
funds.
Right, it's just the part A and B, as I call it, the your summary.
That's correct.
So that'll just need to be changed at 4.3.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good catch.
Yes, absolutely. I wouldn't
want
that.
Other than that, to me, this seems very perfunctory.
It's perfunctory.
Just transferring from one to the other.
That's correct. And we agreed that we would borrow the $7 million from MB Financial. We would transfer $7 million from our existing fund balances into the Capital Projects Fund. And then that we would fund $1 million of project cost. More particularly, the soft costs associated with the project are going to come out of our operational funds.
Gotcha.
And that spreadsheet you see in front of you. It's just a reconciliation. Joe asked for a reconciliation in terms of what our overall project soft costs would be and where we are, where we're at currently. Okay. So we're trending positively. Any questions?
I'm good.
Okay, good. All right, next order of business then this evening is the consultation evaluation matrix. And what this is something I typically, it's not required for board policy, but it was mentioned that it was mentioned that you guys would like to see it. So what I've done is annually I present this typically at this time of year when our capital projects are finishing up and so forth. And that's what you have in front of you right now. And it's a matrix that was developed a number of years ago. And maybe 3 years ago, we continued to use it. We find it helpful. Board members may ask at any given time, what is your relationship with FQC or FGM or any of the other consultants that we use for our operations and maintenance. So this is something that was developed, and it's really is targeted with those that the business office has a relationship with.
Bob, is Jack's firm on here?
No, Jack's firm is still under review. So
they're in the testing period.
They're still in the testing period.
I'm in the honeymoon.
Life is good still.
going forward,
oh, Jack.
We'll add him?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's if we ask
him.
Yeah. What are you in? Like, you're in your 12th month right now?
About that?
A little bit past that.
It's been that long?
Yeah.
Feels like about 5-6
Jack
years.
Exactly. Exactly. You're doing a great job.
Thanks.
You won't be able to see your scores.
So I did not include FQC.
Okay.
For that reason.
The following.
Then we'll pick it up.
Okay. The other thing that I'd like us to do is I'd like to include accounting in the matrix so we can do that and put legal. And do all of them at the same time this time of year. I know it's not a board policy. I know it is a board or a staff procedure. I'd like to just extend that if that's okay with you guys.
To see the numbers.
Well, I just have this. This is an annual evaluation, mm-hmm. and these are our vendors.
Mm-hmm.
Our vendors for
operations and maintenance. That's essentially
yeah,
what
this,
they are.
But mm-hmm. So when it comes down to operation and maintenance, this is who this falls into.
Correct.
The accounting would fall under finance,
mm-hmm. and then
the legal would fall under Paul's room.
Yeah.
Is it? I just think it makes sense to be consistent.
Right.
And develop these matrices on an annual basis we can show to the community we have a procedure for evaluating our vendors.
I just want to reiterate. I think it's more important for you guys to see that. I mean,
I think we are
checking into those pieces? Are we looking at those? Do we have any concerns from your?
Right. If the matrix is, I understand this matrix is in Bob's world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the goal and what you're suggesting is that we need to cover these two other accounting, which would also be Bob's world, which, you know, we probably have the same accounts for how long?
We went out to bid 3 or 4 years
ago.
That
was 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. We're probably in our third or fourth, but we've been with them for a number of years.
Okay. But you go out to bid every now and then.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
And again, the concept is these are vendors.
Mm-hmm.
We evaluate them on an annual basis. The board reviews the matrix. And if we, at any one point in a year, if we want to do an RFP, you know, the matrix dictates that.
Right.
So I think that's theoretically that's the concept. And again, my opinion is it would make sense to just expand it into those fields.
Understood.
Is that something that you think you could do, Bob?
We'll take direction from the board.
But he'll only do one of the two.
Yeah, won't do. He won't do.
He's not going to
do. You'll do account.
He'll do his.
I can do account.
Under his purview.
Right. Patrick, what do you think? I mean, I I mean, I have a general statement when I look at this. I mean, when I look at the report, I mean, at the end of the day, the matrix is important. I think it's an important tool for those utilizing it. Informing us what the information is, I think, is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that is appropriate. I mean, at the end of the day, I look at this, and, you know, I typically am dealing with the same type of vendors you are
right
here, and, you know what's best because you're working with them day to day. It shouldn't take every year to do a matrix to say, we need a change, mm-hmm. we need to look for somebody new, or I just need to feel good about it, because at the end of the day, you know, are they being efficient? You know, are they being professional? All that stuff is a day-to-day feeling that you have on the projects you're working on. So it's got to be very fluid for you. I think it's important, I've stated this before since I got on the board, it's important that you're testing new consultants. If it's a small project or you're talking to your counterparts at other districts, who are they using? What kind of experiences are they getting? It's public information. What are they paying? You know, it's not like in my business, no one's going to tell you that this guy's cutting me a good deal. But in this arena, you know if somebody's getting $150 an hour or whatever. So it's easier to price compare for you. And it's my expectation, and I know you're doing it, you know, that you're out there keeping your finger on the pulse of the market as it changes. Because to me, that's ultimately what needs to be happening. And then you come to us when something's wrong. If we wait every year, and that's not the goal of these, I know. This is more informational.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, when I read it too, just my take on it, the engineer's ratings are fine. They're not great. They're fine. Ericsson, you know, they're well-respected in the marketplace. So they're getting, you know, above average. But my question, does our architect use other engineers, or are they only using Ericsson typically?
You know, Ericsson is great for civil.
Right.
And I know there are other civil engineers out there. I don't know which ones probably deal more specifically in education and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, typically your architect has to work well with your engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And that's why they're tied together. So I just ask the question when I read these ratings is, and not that they're bad. I don't want to get that impression.
And I wasn't trying to.
No, I know. They're good, and they've been with us a long time. But my question is who does our architect use? Do they use other people if they had success with
yes.
other people? And to me, that then says, well, you know, should we entertain a discussion with those other people from time to time and make sure that we're doing it? I like doing that anyways because Ericsson Harris are doing that.
Some anecdotes.
Yeah, and the one area I think in here, if I remember the report I read this weekend, is timing is important, and that they may be a little lagging, but, you know, engineers go up and down with their personnel, so sometimes
you know, and you're absolutely right about
catching
that.
Up. But that I kind of went long there, but that was my view of the whole of how I see this report. But as far as extending it to other vendors, well, I think it's appropriate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's as long as. I don't know if it's annually or it's when the board feels that they want to see it. But
I think if we make it an annual thing, and not trying to make an onerous task for Bob, but I think that, again, the concept would be, you know, Bob puts a matrix together, presents us with his findings, and then it's kind of... It's a quick review for us to just say we're good. We'll bump it till next year, or if we have an issue, then we would have further discussion. But I think the other two vendors are intended to be kind of the same thing, to just have a quick review. Are we good? Again, kind of a thumbs down, thumbs up thing.
Okay. Patrick?
I don't know about that. I think we'd have to put some ring fence around it. Do we say anything where a vendor is getting $1 million worth of revenue? Or revenue, you know, you're getting $1 million worth of charge, $500,000? Does Bob have to review the guy that brings the water? I mean, we can tell him review vendors and review distributors. But what we said is review everybody. We haven't fenced it in.
And that's, I see what you're saying. And that, I don't think that's the intent. I think it was just to add these other two pieces.
Okay.
Which would be the accounting piece and the legal piece.
But accounting would have multiple software vendors, right?
No.
It's just an auditor.
That's just the auditor.
It's our auditor.
Okay.
That's the Baker Tilly audit.
And we went out to audit. We went out to bid.
Okay.
For these services 3 years ago.
Three years ago.
So you're talking about the auditor and
the attorney.
That's it.
Well, we want to add Jack. I think those are the main ones. I don't think it makes sense to.
Okay.
So I like Patrick's concept of trying to fence it in. So yeah. I'm good with that.
Okay.
My students generally have to do that every day. This is just a report to
this
us.
This is a report.
Yeah. I have faith in you guys that you'll come to us if there's a price problem, price issue, mm-hmm. a delivery issue, a quality issue, all the things that are on the spectrum.
I would say you would probably be aware of an issue long before we ever got to that.
That's what I want to make sure. Yeah. To me,
that's more important than...
The reason I'm saying that is, to me, that's what's important.
Yeah. I concur.
Matrix has a lot of,
But I think the matrix is a tool that we can use to quantify that and say this is why we're unhappy and this is why.
Okay. I'll give you an example. We had a contractor here about 8 years ago that performed horribly, and the projects didn't get done until January. We were literally downstairs in my office writing checks from the district to the subcontractors because he couldn't even pay the subcontractors. So it was a bad deal from square one, and the board certainly would have heard about something like that long before it ever got to a year-end review.
All right.
All right, so we got that.
Okay.
Yeah, we're good.
All right, then. This evening now, tonight is our first conversation around a 2014 proposed property tax levy. I just want to preface that you have a board report in front of you that's going to take you through briefly what I'm going to say, but I'll also say that there's some knowledge that I don't have that I typically do have this time of year. Milton Township has not given me an indication, a solid indication yet, where the EAV and new construction may be. You know, we're in two townships. We're in Bloomingdale. Out of our $1.2 billion in EAV, $10 million is over in Bloomingdale, and we have the balance here in Milton. So generally, Milton is going to push our tax levy in terms of how all the dollars are going to be allocated. So when I called both of the township assessors, the gentleman up in Bloomingdale is anticipating yet another decline in EAV, and theirs will be about 3% down in EAV. And new construction, generally that doesn't even add into the equation because it's so minor. I will tell you that I spoke with the assessor for Milton Township, and he's kind of hedging his bets because all his numbers weren't in yet. They believe that EAV is going to be flat for District 41 this year. As you know, it's decreased the past 4 or 5 years at between 4 and 6%, where we used to have $400 million, we now have almost $1.2 billion in EAV. So he's told me to leave that number alone for now, and then I'm to get, if you wish, to get back to him soon in terms of him being able to give me a more solid number. He has projected, initial projections are $12 million in new construction for Milton Township, and essentially an even EAV.
12% or $12 million of new construction, is that up from the last 5 years?
Yeah, we had $9.9 million. And I tell you, see, I call the assessors every year, and they tell me, well, I remember 1 year we were $3 million off in new construction. And that's because he gave me an estimate, and when the numbers finally came through in January, they didn't plan out according to his best estimates. So, you know, what we're doing now, all the important, the only known, real known factor in this levy is what the CPI is because we used the CPI from the previous year. What we don't know, and which are two critical factors, are the equalized assessed valuation and new construction, as I stated. Now, with the numbers that I've presented here this evening, I've kept the majority of the EAV even. We've estimated $12 million. Based upon those estimates, we receive about $620,000 in money associated with just a general increase in the CPI. That's what 1.5% generates, is approximately $620,000. The balance is made up of new construction. And I was doing some preliminary calculations, and for each $1 million in new construction, we garner about $38,000 in revenue. So that's what new construction is worth, too.
How much? $38,000?
About $38,000.
Per million.
Right.
So that might,
I will call the gentleman again before we have our next finance committee meeting, see if he has any final numbers for me. But, Paul and I have had a lot of conversations around this levy issue. You know, I actually start taking a look at levies 6 months ahead of time because we do know what some of the values are going to be. So that's generally how I approach the levy. So just to give you a quick summary now, the CPI was 1.5% for this levy. We've used 12,500,000. We're holding the EAV essentially at last year's level. And then what does all that mean? When I extend out that increase that we're requesting, at least what my estimates are, we're calling for about a 2.6% increase, which is the 1.5 CPI and then additional dollars for new construction. And we're asking for a 3.52 levy.
For what's the difference?
An increase. The difference between the two numbers, it's $1,075,000 for the 2.6 of where I believe we're going to enter, what we're going to receive, and the difference of 3.52% the number is $1,450,000. So between those two numbers is the difference, obviously.
Okay, so it's
small. It's about $380,000, yeah. Something like that. It's under $400,000.
Yeah. Which again is a big difference from years and years ago.
Well, years. There's a chart that you'll see in your levy presentation when we take this to the finance committee and to the board. A number of years ago, they would ask for 10, 15, 20% difference between what the request was and what the expectations were on the part of the district. And here we are now. We're talking the difference between 2.6 and 3.52. It's less than a percent.
So they walk through this slowly. This always gets brought up there. If you look at the CPI at 1.5 plus the new construction, you equal roughly $1,076,000.
Correct.
So then the question always comes, why? This is where the confusion is. Why ask?
Why the difference?
Why the difference that then generates $372,000 more?
And my response to that is it's because of the unknowns. We don't know what EAV, so, and I do not know what new construction
is. So what we know we need as a district is $1,453,000.
Correct.
That's what we need to operate our budget, given our programs, given the increases in expenses that you project.
That's what we're looking for. Correct.
And it's possible that the new construction could be up above.
I don't think so. I've been tracking new construction in this district. We have a historical chart in my office that goes back 20 years.
Okay.
And for a lot of years it was averaging between 28 and 35 million. For the past 5 years, it hasn't gone above 8.8 or 9.8 million. So, and a couple of years ago, we were down around $4, $5, or $6 million in new construction.
Okay.
So we track 5-year averages and 10-year averages. We're significantly under each of those at this point in time. That's why, I came here 8 years ago. We used to use these trending averages. Well, we've broken all the trends over the past several years from the national economy perspective, and I can't rely upon those numbers anymore. So we reach out, we talk to the folks in the counties or the townships that we work with, and they're the ones that provide you with probably the best data, the most up-to-date data. So that's something we do every fall. We reach out to these officials. We talk to them. We get their best estimates in terms of what they believe they're going to see. And then we have to make a decision how we approach it.
And you're saying that this year the assessor is slower to get the information?
He's not there yet to give me solid.
But normally you would have it, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I usually call September, and he's already...
Really?
Yeah, he's got a pretty solid idea, but I don't get that feeling. He was non-committal. He told me when he has the information, he will email it to me immediately. And it's been a little while since I've heard from him.
So when the EAV comes back in Milton less, because it's seen a decrease in the past 4 or 5 years, how does that affect the math we just went?
Well, that it pushes up your tax rate.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first thing that it does.
Because the increase is going to be less than 620, so there's going to be a bigger delta between what we normally get, which now is 1876.
Or what I expect to get.
Yeah, than what you're asking.
Correct.
And ultimately, what do we receive is what the assessors come across with. It may not be the 3.52. It would be
what they're saying. It'd be something in between them.
It's what they ultimately
said. Oh, I don't set it.
We don't set it. They said it ultimately.
Yes.
Yes.
Just for clarity's sake.
All I do is I request.
Yes.
And then they come back in March. 3 months, you know when I get this? It's typically the last week of March, the first week of April is when they send me the results of all the work that we've done. So here you are in October, we're making a levy recommendation for something that's really not going to be decided until March. And I mean the last week of March.
And we have to bring this, per law, we have to bring this back in December. What is that
last? This has to be approved by the last Tuesday in December. We typically take care of it. Because we're around the holidays and everything, mm-hmm. We usually take care of it at our first and only board meeting during the month of December.
I know we talk about it every year, but I think it's important for clarity's sake why this is such an odd system that
because it's so odd in this, and I'm just wondering, and I'll ask Joe and Drew this, do we need to sit down and crunch, I hate to say this, 2.5 hours worth of work of going 15, 16, 17 levy, SB 16 possibilities with budget stuff. I mean, because like you said, levies, budgets are always on a different cycle. And then take a long-term consideration, possibility, probabilities to SB 16 in the four-year, evolution of it.
And that's why we're recommending this levy is because of those unknowns, because of the Senate Bill 16. Even though Senate Bill 16 may not come forward in its current form, I don't believe there's anyone out there that is saying there will be no educational finance reform out there.
I'm saying, no one is saying. But as a workshop, maybe we put it together, budgets, the levies, the SB 16 at 100% what it is now, at a 0%, and maybe at 15%, and we just timeline those things together.
And those are pieces that we can bring back to you. So we'll show you. The other piece that I think we have to be aware of is the cost sharing, the cost shift of the pensions.
Yeah, right.
That is a very real piece that when we, you heard from Peg a few weeks ago, that's a real piece out there that I believe Speaker Madigan is looking in his estimation, he would like to see a 6%, which is pretty drastic. I believe there would be a gradual, over time they would implement that. But 6% is pretty huge.
Have we put a dollar amount for the 6% for D41?
That's what we're looking at and saying, how do all these pieces, and we'll bring that to you at the next Finance Committee where we'll show you a full Senate Bill 16. A full cost share at their 6%, or is it graduated over time? We would lay those pieces out for you because we've been working on the budget for a little while, but these are those great unknowns. What do you, how do you budget for them, and why we're recommending this levy along with the student fees? Because yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, but again, I guess I'm talking about more than the Nez Job levy, because in my mind, I'm also throwing in phase two in there. That's a lot of high impact budgetary variables.
Mm-hmm.
And the levy is a 1-year conversation, but I know, I'm wondering, is if at a board we need to have a, I don't want to say a 5-year plan, but a 5-year forecast of how all this stuff could impact us. And it's, I mean, it's going to be dry as hell for some people to go through it, but, you know, the three of us might be able to, this is our wheelhouse, right?
That's what we do every day. So
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking
about. I think it's a great idea. I really do. Bob, is this something that if because I like the forecasting idea, is that something that you could work with? Who's the? Who am I missing? PMI. Is it a PMI?
PMA. Yeah, we work with PMA.
They could help us put some forecasts out there. And
we're working with PMA as I have been for the past couple of weeks in next year's projections.
Okay, so
but you also saw projections late last year as we were moving through this the recommendation and how to fund these projects, right?
But yeah, the long term projects, you know, require annual refreshing.
Oh, absolutely.
If it kicks out the next year, it kicks out the next year.
The one thing I wonder when you're doing that is the variables. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I mean, you end up having, with SB 16.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about let's go down to granular school supplies and all that other stuff. I'm saying let's look at the five buckets, you know, operations, education,
right,
you know, tort, and then just that high level.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, is that going to put a lot of...
What I would recommend is that we bring you back exactly what you're asking for from those big buckets, Patrick, because I agree. What does that look like if SB 16 were implemented, and what would that look 4 years down the road?
Exactly, each year.
Absolutely. From the worst case to what we're hearing on the street about each one, so you could see each variable.
I just see a Gantt chart out there, you know, of 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Here's the budget.
We have that data together from the fine art of the facility.
Yep.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be that much for us to do.
But okay. I just, at the end of the day, if you know the worst case scenario, and maybe you know a mid case scenario, and you have the current. I don't think you need five more scenarios.
No.
I don't either.
Just
what we put in is the cost share, the cost shift, the SB 16, and anything that we see on the horizon for public education.
Because we have pretty good
the pension piece. So they think that
pension is the when I say cost share. That's what it is. That's what we're seeing. But I think that's what you have to see. What are all those dynamics that are occurring out there?
I was with our consortium business managers, our PACE business managers today, and to a man, to a person, we all agree we don't know what's going to happen. But something is going to happen.
Yeah.
They don't think it's going to happen in the veto session or the lame duck session. They think it's going to be part of next spring. But you can be rest assured that something is going to happen.
Yeah, I guess I would just feel more comfortable as a board. You know, we don't have to know what the target is here.
Mm-hmm.
No,
the big target out here.
No.
So we just like we do 20 students learning from a finance perspective.
I think it would be very similar to what Bob's presented to you on a 5-year forecast, the 10-year forecast on what we did with the $7 million budget that we borrowed the money from to see how is this going to work over time with the 3% increase for staff, what the agreed upon contract.
I think it's easier for people to say, here's a 17 levy, but it's represented for the 18 budget that's associated with the 14 SB 6.
Yep.
And
we'll just put it in big chunks for you. Okay.
Yes. Well, I think that's...
No, we've already kind of...
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm like, we can do that for you. And then you guys can rip it apart. It's a setup. It'd be a lot of work.
Student fees. I'm ready.
Yeah, student fees.
Okay, student fees.
For me, the recommendation goes along with the levy. Holding for this year to see where we're at, where are we at, what are the recommendations from the legislators, what's happening out there. I just don't want to change.
When do we set our student fees? In the spring?
In spring, but this was Mr. Escalante's request, and I think it was the right request.
I want to brainstorm, so I want to make sure I have 4 months of brainstorming.
I totally agree.
So I'm setting that up. Okay. And by remember, he held this constant for 7 years, so now it's
been. I've been here 8 years.
Yeah, they've never gone up, they've never gone out.
So I'll change my
They're a bargain.
They're a bargain.
They're a bargain. Make my eating.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, with the, us getting. With the things that are out there, I'm almost hesitant to publish these numbers and almost just keep it topical. Hey, are we going to do student fees or are we not going to do student fees? Wow, it threw me back on the other side of the fence when we start hearing how bad we're going to get robbed from the state. So I'm almost wondering if we just say, fees will be a discussion for spring conversation as relates to possible revenue conversations.
And I'm fine with that. I think you want to keep it fluid without stating what they are and putting it in stone this early,
yeah,
given the uncertainties and boundaries and uncertainties in this world. For me, I have two general comments that I'll. One is what I said last year. This is a user fee. So for our constituents that are the taxpayers who don't, and this is kind of when Sam was in here, no fees and stuff like that. To me, it's like user fees are more, it's a tax, but it's a, you know, it's kind of like a tollway. I use the tollway a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, I'm okay with those. And if we haven't increased them in 9 years, and these are the users of the facilities, the users of everything that we're providing, then to me, this is a better place to increase than it is to our global taxpayers, to our global constituents. So that's the
I agree, and that's why I say, let's not, we know what the fees are now. I would like to, for next year's spring's conversation, if we, I would say blank them out, but just make it understood that it could radically change. It could not change. It could be the same.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't want to pin us down to.
I'm good with that. In my second, you know, it's philosophical, but you know, I listen. Keep all the staff talk about how extracurricular activities is a key component for the children's success. How important that is. And you look at, Lori gave us a presentation, where we're changing stipends here and there. These activities don't cover the stipends at all. So it's not, but if they're not meant to be a 1-to-1 ratio,
no.
And I understand that. They're not even close. They're like a 1-to-18 or something ridiculous, which I'm fine with, because extracurricular activities to me are important. One of the questions I asked Lori, and she gave us the data of all the extracurricular activities. Did you guys get that spreadsheet she sent to us? And so I started digesting it. And, you know, to me, the number I want to know is, and for Lori, is the number of students that we have in these activities. And students get activity waivers if they can't afford it, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, if activities are that, and I believe they are, if they're that important, an extracurricular activity to the kids' academic success, then I don't want to have a fee for the first activity. Because why am I prohibiting it? In fact, but I'm going to build it into the base fee, therefore you're paying for it because you need to be doing this. And to me, that's important, because the end result is those children that do perform in the activities or, spend time in the extracurricular activities. And the thing is, we have a wide base. This isn't like when we were growing up.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of choices.
Yeah, you got like four choices. If you don't like the choices, you could get a group together to form a choice. So to me, I want to promote that. And I look at it, and any parent looking at first activity is $30. Well, you know what? I'm not going to pay the $30. We're not going. There are people who are making that decision. And I would rather have the pricing structure so we don't make that. So we don't force that. in fact, we promote the activities because your first one's free. If somebody calls you out on it, yeah, well, the reason it's free is it's now in the main fee. I don't care about that because I want these kids in these activities. And that's just
an interesting way of looking at it.
So fees out there,
yep,
maybe whited out or blanked out or just as a topical comment.
Okay.
So we're not going to move forward with this until spring. Is that what I'm hearing?
Because as we get into our budget conversations, I need to know from the board early that these are part of what we have to work from to build the budget, is what I'm hearing, the recommendation.
Well, I heard that they're a moving target, they're not in stone, and that the market will dictate ultimately what they are. I'd like you guys to consider my idea.
Of course. But to Paul's point, I think I think you could consider these the floor.
Right.
Thank you.
Probably go up.
To me.
Yes.
That's what I needed to know to build the budget. What am I working
with? How it gets structured.
Okay. That's great feedback.
I believe that's it.
I do too. You got a few minutes.
Can I make a couple of general comments?
I almost pushed stop.
I just want to make one comment. In reviewing the BMO cards that I do get to do every other year, I had made a request that you kind of reach out to those people spending money on gas and various things to do it in Glen Ellen. There's a remarkable change.
Yeah.
Because I delivered that message.
You did. You delivered it and they
learned. They received.
So, yeah. So
I'm glad you noticed that because I noticed that too was on the BMO.
Yeah,
that Glen Ellen.
You saw it progressing, but this one was on.
This one was.
Everything's kind of sunk in and it's become.
So that's the point. Message given, message delivered, and message heard.
Yeah.
Back to the staff. Went well.
So thanks.
Okay. Nice.
Back to this.
With that, we're good?
We're good.